You mentioned Joe Bob Hilly, and I want to mention him because we now know about the Hilly Foundation and the great work they're doing in our city. And then Joe Bob died early in his life, I believe.
He did.
Leaving Mary Ann with the company and then obviously the foundation after that, right?
Well, we were a public company by that time. When we started in 1973, it was just Joe Bob, me, and the secretary. And that's when we sold Andover after 10 years. That's when I had enough money to really start Vintage at that time. And I asked Joe Bob to join me to do that. So it was just me and him and the secretary. And we started looking for oil and gas properties to buy and doing the same thing that we did in Andover.
So then did he die while he was a partner of yours?
Yes. We started Vintage in 1983. We took the company public in 1990. And it was after we took the company public that he passed away.
How old was he about to you?
He was probably middle to late 40s.
Wow. How did he die?
Well, that's when he got Alzheimer's. And he lived another 6 or 7 years before he passed away.
From Alzheimer's?
Yeah.
Did you begin to notice things?
Yes.
And then you had to talk to his wife?
Well, I didn't have to talk to his wife. I mean, they knew.
They knew, too.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it took us a while to figure out what was going on. I mean, it was kind of like he was losing interest. Uh-huh. And that wasn't the case. He was just losing his mind, I guess.
Yeah.
When we really realized that, we put him in a different position. I mean, kept the title, but we moved somebody else up to really take over what his duties were at that time. So he stayed around with the company for quite a while before he retired.
We're talking about the 60s right now, are we?
Well, we're probably in the 70s and starting the 80s.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the method for oil discovery and how it's changed over the years, say from the 60s and 70s. I'm just going to throw out the shale oil and horizontal drilling, and maybe you comment on that.
You know, everything used to be done with geological studies. Geologists would come up with a concept for a play. They would develop that and sell it to management, and management would go out and drill a wildcat, and these would be vertical wells. Up until the shale revolution, that's exactly how oil and gas was developed. Now, the shale plays started around 2005 and 4 and 5, and it probably really started in the gas play in North Texas, Barnett Shale. And then it sort of took off. It moved kind of to North Dakota and then down to various other places, Oklahoma, different places. Everybody, through all the drilling that's been done in the United States, we know where all the shale is. So trying to develop shale plays are really not hard to do. You know what kind of thickness you need, you know what kind of thermal properties you need, and those are all pretty much documented. So it's just a matter of doing the studies and picking the areas that were in the right places, and then you just go drill horizontal wells. And an example in North Dakota when I was up there, the Bakken Shale is what is productive up there. So in 1960, when I was up there, we were still drilling wells. We drilled through the Bakken. We actually tried to complete a couple of them. And the shales would be, I don't know, 50 feet thick. And they would probably produce 10 barrels of oil a day, which was not economical for drilling those wells. Well, today you can drill a horizontal well into that shale, and you can drill it 10,000 feet horizontal, and you can frack that well, and that well will produce 1,500 to maybe 2,000 barrels of oil a day. That's a lot of oil.
Yes.
Those wells, though, cost about $10 million to drill. And these wells, when they come in, they fall off really pretty fast. You know, they'll decline probably 50% in a year. If you're looking at stable production, they may decline at 5% a year. So, you know, and they come down and they level off. And so that's kind of how that's evolved. And there's a lot more that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
We grew production from 4.5 million barrels a day over about a 8-year period up to 13.1 million barrels a day. Had never been done before. And then when the pandemic hit and all that, we lost about 3,000 barrels a day, and it hadn't got back up to that point yet.
Okay. So you served as president of Vintage, and then you became a public company.
We became a public company in 1990.
Okay.
We started in 83. We became a public company in 1990. We sold the company in 2006.
Okay.
When we started the company, it was just Joe Bob and I, and within a very short period of time, we bought about $140 million worth of oil and gas properties, and this was in 1984. 1985, we'd used our money and we had borrowed from the bank. 1985, we sold production to repay the bank down. And 1985 is when there was the big decline in oil prices. It went from $40 a barrel down to $6. And that caused a really big problem. But we had paid off the bank to the point that wasn't a problem. But we didn't have any other liquidity to buy production at that time. So I ended up selling about 15% of the company to two other parties. It was Prudential Oil Company, investment banking company in New York City. Dylan Reed was the name of it. So that gave us the funds to start buying production. And they were our partner at that time. They owned 15% of the company. And I knew at some point in time they were going to want to get out. And we kept buying production until 1990, and we had grown the company pretty well. We made some good acquisitions at some pretty low prices, and you know, the price of oil then started going up. So in 1990, I decided that the best thing for the company was take it public so that our employees who had stock options in the company knew what value their options were worth. Our partners had a currency that they could either keep or sell to get out of. And it gave us a new venue to raise money from the public as we bought other oil and gas properties. And we would issue new stock and we would use our bank line of credit to buy new oil and gas properties. And that's what we did until we sold the company to Occidental Petroleum in 2006.
So going public was a good experience for you, but I'm sure quite difficult to do.
Well, it took a lot of time and a lot of effort. It was expensive, but it was the best thing we could do at the time. And it was a different, caused me to look at business a little differently. It was more concentrated towards early performance and looking at a big picture, planning how you grow the company long term. Most Wall Street's looking for what you're doing today and not necessarily tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We went public the day after Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait.
Oh.
And it made oil prices go up. And it allowed us to price our our stock offering at the level we wanted to, instead of at a little discount. So we sent Saddam a thank you note.
And so we also say there's some luck in this business, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely.
Somebody that's in the oil business, I was talking about interviewing you, and he said that you seem to time the market better than most on when to buy and when to sell. That's a compliment, but would you accept that you felt you had good timing?
Not really. I think I was lucky. I learned what I needed to learn to take advantage of the embargo that happened. And when oil prices started going up, I was at the right time to take advantage of that, because it was hard not to make a good deal in 1972. If you did your evaluation right and you thought you had some upside, it probably wasn't 2 or 3 months after we bid on a property and got it that price of oil went up. And, you know, you're going up from $2 a barrel, maybe up to $6. I mean, that totally changed the economics of everything. We didn't have to borrow a whole lot of money from the bank when we started Andover to do that. And vintage was a different deal. The timing was there, and we just were lucky to be able to take advantage of it.
Where were your fields exploring oil? All United States? Did you do any overseas?
No. We started in Oklahoma, and we moved to Texas and to Mississippi, Louisiana. Then my first foreign venture was in California. We bought a lot of production in California.
You call that foreign?
Yes. It's foreign. It's different. And we bought quite a bit of production out there, and we bought it from major oil companies who were kind of, you know, getting out of the business. When things got really competitive buying production, I knew we had to do something different. So I told the guys, figure out, you know, where we needed to go offshore to look for deals that are not as competitive as they are in the States. So we did our study, and we thought Argentina and Canada was two good areas. So the first deal that we looked at was in Argentina. We ended up being successful in buying a company who had bought production from the national oil company. Saddam Hussein invaded, made the oil prices go up. Pervisa sold production. This company bought it, and then prices went down, and they were in a problem. So we were able to buy that company. They had concessions covering 1 million acres in the San Jorge Basin in southern Argentina. So we bought that. They had a major partner who owned 50%. We bought that. So we ended up with 100% interest in 1 million acres in Argentina that had probably 40 different fields in it that the major oil company had developed. And they had not done any seismic out there, so we did some seismic. We could see all these zones that got developed, and we started drilling wells. Our success rate was, I guess, 98%.
Wow.
Rates of return were over 100%. So Argentina ended up being about a half of the production of our other production. And other things we did were in Canada. We bought a company up there that it didn't turn out as successful as Argentina did. And then we bought some production in Bolivia, which turned out fine. And we did a little exploration in Tobago, Trinidad and Tobago. Then we did a concession with a partner in Yemen, and we discovered about 3 oil fields in Yemen. And that was the only place I didn't go to. The guy that ran our Yemeni production was a Vietnamese, a really good guy. So those are all the different areas that we operated in.